A satellite 22,000 miles up has exactly one job: watch storms so we can duck. So how does the same machine end up making clouds look like wet oil paint? This is issue number 83 of the Intersect newsletter. Call it "The Satellite is the Camera."
The through line, you know, artists keep grabbing tools built for science, like satellites, plant sensors, microscopes, synthesizers, 3D printers, and using them to make art they were never meant for. We've got a weather satellite turned into cinema, a fern wired into a synth, David Hockney's love affair with fax machines, a 1982 microscope meets Moog film, and a 3D printed couture on a Brooklyn runway. It's quite a lineup.
2,500 infrared images pulled off a weather satellite, and the weather in them is genuinely boring. 6 uneventful days of water vapor in September 2024.
Yeah, I mean, Sage Helene wrote about this at My Modern Met. The film, it's called Waterworld, and it's by digital artist Son Doran. He pulled those 2,500 infrared images from the GOES-16 satellite, and then he painstakingly repaired the gaps in the footage frame by hand, colorized them, and then, you know, slowed the whole thing down.
And what you get is like monochrome storm tracking footage that becomes these teal and silver clouds drifting across the Western Hemisphere, like brushstrokes almost. It's really something.
And you know, the GOES-16 satellite, it orbits 22,000 miles up. It was built specifically to track hurricanes and issue weather alerts. It was never, ever, ever meant to make art.
And that's what gets me, right? Because if you strip it all down, I mean, this is just a time lapse. Like, it's nothing more exotic than that, really. But who decided you needed a traditional camera to make one?
Exactly. Doran's camera, if you want to call it that, is just this machine in orbit. And you know, the result, it's edited and constructed with so much more care, I think, than most films that are actually shot on real lenses. It's, well, what Jürgen, you know, really loves about it is the detail that the weather patterns aren't dramatic at all. They're just ordinary vapor across 6 uneventful days.
And that's kind of the whole point, isn't it? Like, the art wasn't in the weather itself. It was in deciding that the satellite was a camera all along.
Yeah. Jürgen's take on this is that who would have ever thought, you know, you don't actually need a camera at all, that a satellite can be your camera for a time lapse that's this well edited and constructed. It really flips your perspective.
It makes you wonder, you know, what else have we been staring at for years, not realizing it was footage just waiting for an editor? Before we get to the fern that literally hums, quick thing.
The reason this newsletter exists is really to catch exactly these moves we've been talking about. A tool built to measure the world, quietly handed a second job it never applied for. If that's your kind of thing, you know, the weekly issue is where all of this lives, curated by artist technologist Jürgen Birkesell. You can subscribe at theintersect.art.
Okay, so this next one, you actually listen to a plant. Honestly, the first time I heard about this, I kind of rolled my eyes. A fern making music? But the more I sat with it, the more it got me.
Yeah, I mean, Tamai Tsimbu wrote this up at Design Boom. And the whole practice is, it's called biosonification. You clamp a tiny electrode onto a fern, you read its electrochemical flickers, and then you pipe them into a synthesizer. A fern just, you know, hums a sine wave drone. A philodendron, it might trigger a melody.
It's really, it's gallery work. The kind of thing that makes you just sort of lower your voice without knowing why. I mean, the article traces the lineage back to Data Barden and the MIDI sprout, and even to a 1960s polygraph expert who hooked leaves to a lie detector and just wondered if plants could feel.
Which is, I think, this issue's move in miniature, really. An instrument built to measure voltage redirected toward feeling. And you know, what I really like about this is the honesty of the people doing it. Data Garden's Patitucci, he stresses that he and his collaborators are, quote, artists more than scientists. And they often just say, we don't know what it all means. The goal is to foster wonder, not to claim plants literally feel emotions or speak to us. A pothos is not composing ambient techno. Mushrooms are not singing to us. That we don't know is like rarer than it should be.
Right? And Jurgen, he actually ran a piece a few issues back, issue 82, about an artist converting the Northern Lights into a soundscape. It's that same instinct, just a totally different subject. Something in us wants to hear the parts of the world that don't, you know, announce themselves.
And working with generative tools daily, he keeps noticing the same thing. The sound isn't the discovery, it's the act of choosing to listen that is.
So, is the plant actually telling us something? Or are we finally just quiet enough to admit we've been talking over everything else?
Which brings up someone who was doing this decades before it was cool. When we say tech in art now, we basically mean a screen, an app, something glowing. But that reflex is, it's really recent. David Hockney is the proof.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Like, my mind always goes straight to, digital canvases.
Exactly. And well, when David Hockney passed recently, the New York Times, their arts and designs desk, actually ran a remembrance of him, not just as a painter, but as a man, you know, with this lifelong appetite for machines. Things like Polaroids, photocopiers, fax machines, and then eventually, yeah, the iPhone and iPad, too.
So, he was an early adopter in his own way, even with those older, more physical tools.
Yeah, absolutely. And the piece, it really traces how each new tool, it just, it gave him forms that his paintings never could. As the article puts it, Polaroids and photocopiers gave him possibilities for creating in forms vastly different from his traditional paintings. And I think that's key, because most people, they just would never file Hockney under, artist who embraced technology. And that's simply wrong. A photocopier is technology. A fax machine is technology. He bent both towards something nobody expected.
And that's the through line for the whole issue, isn't it? He's the historical version of that exact same move. A tool that has like a set purpose, and then someone just takes it and does something completely, unexpected with it. But I also wonder, some of the best intersections, they really happened back when the machine was physical, and stubborn, and it pushed back.
You're right. A fax has grain, it has smudge, it has friction. An app, though, it mostly just does what you ask it to. And I think Hockney, he really loved that talking back part. And maybe that's where, the most interesting art actually lived. The curator, his take was he wanted to honor Hockney's passing here, but also to make that point that thinking tech means screens. It's a relatively recent development. Technology's just, it's been inside artworks for a very long time.
So did we trade away the friction that made the intersection worth visiting in the first place?
Speaking of physical machines that push back, 1982.
How do you get a microscope and a synthesizer to, talk to each other? And why would you even try that, back in 1982?
Well, that's Maggie Payne. So in 1982, she did this incredible thing where she pointed a microscope at crystals as they grew. She filmed it, and then she set that footage against a Moog Modular Series 3. Plus, real solar wind data from one of NASA's top physicists, the late Fred Scarf. Peter Kiern, he wrote about it over at Create Digital Music, pointing back to this excerpt of the piece called Crystal that was surfaced by the Bob Moog Foundation.
A microscope and a Moog.
That's just, it's wild. It really is. And Payne, she's the longtime co-director of Mills College's Center for Contemporary Music. Gita Dayal, she wrote for the LA Phil about it, calling it handmade videos of crystals growing under a microscope and data of solar winds provided by one of NASA's top physicists, the late Fred Scarf. So you have the very small, the very large, all wired to the same patch cables.
It's that move again, isn't it? These instruments built to measure something, totally redirected toward feeling something else. We talk about interdisciplinary work like it's some brand new invention, and here's someone doing it, in 1982 with a modular synth and a microscope. The same year, the rest of us thought a home computer was exotic.
Exactly. She didn't wire those fields together to just look clever, you know? She did it because she was, I think, genuinely curious about all of them at once. And Juergen's read on this is that some artists, they've always just treated technology as inspiration, not a gadget. Paine connecting crystals, microscopy, synthesis, and NASA physics in a truly innovative way.
Though when one curiosity reaches across like that many fields, is it still just one discipline or is it four pretending to be one? Last one, and this one, honestly, we don't usually cover this stuff. Picture a snake skeleton top, 3D printed, you know, made with an architect, walking a runway back in 2010. That was the first Van Herpen garment the printer ever built.
Right. Marissa Guthrie, she wrote this for WWD, running at Art News. It's all about Iris Van Herpen sculpting the senses, the Dutch designer's mid-career retrospective at the Brooklyn Museum. And she was the first designer to actually use that technology for a wearable garment.
And I mean, more than 15 years later, she's just kept pushing material and technique, hasn't she? Collaborating with architects, sculptors, chemists, multidisciplinary artists, bioengineers, and even astrophysicists. You see Lady Gaga, Bjork, and Beyonce, they've all worn the results.
And this is where, you know, we actually have some genuine tension. The Intersect rarely touches fashion, and honestly, a lot of runway design reads as pure attention-grabbing. I mean, the celebrity roster really doesn't help dispel that, does it?
No, it doesn't. But the 3D printing aspect, that keeps nagging. It just makes each piece so singular in a way a sewing machine can't. And that's harder to wave off as just spectacle.
Exactly. It's that same trick just one industry over. A 3D printer is a tool of industrial precision, and she hands it to a body on a runway. It's not satellite tech, sure, but it's that same instinct, a tool doing a job it was never really made for.
Our curator, he's genuinely torn about this one, you know? He appreciates the architectural side, but isn't sure this is an art, fashion, tech intersection worth the pages. His way of looking at it is that it's another use of technology in an unexpected, out-of-band way.
Which means we're turning it over to you. Do you want more fashion and tech intersections in these pages? Or is this one runway, well, too far?
Last one, and this one, honestly, we don't usually cover this stuff. So, I mean, we've talked about a satellite, an electrode attached to a fern, a fax machine, a microscope, and a 3D printer. It's quite a mix, isn't it?
Yeah, and what unites them, you know, is that these are all instruments built to measure or manufacture something, and they were all quietly handed a second job to make us, well, to make us feel something.
It's like the tool never stops doing its original job, right? But the artist just refuses to see it as only that. They decide it can be something else, too.
Exactly. It really makes you wonder, you know, what everyday measuring instrument around you might already be a camera in disguise?
We hope you enjoyed looking at these stories with us. For the full issue and all the pieces we'll be covering next week, you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter at theintersect.art.